Today is September 30th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 133, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-at-large, co-publisher, and dude.
And all-around good guy.
Dude. I like dude. Can I be dude?
And dude. You can be dude. We'll put that on your business card if you'd like.
I think I want to. I'm going to at least put it on the contact page. Dude.
Okay.
Brian Chaffin, dude. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR@macobserver.com.
I love our job.
It's a good job, isn't it? We're lucky men. Lucky, lucky men.
We most certainly are.
Speaking of lucky folk, we have sponsors.
All right. We do, and we certainly are lucky for that.
We are lucky for that. It's Smile on my Mac. They've been good to us as sponsors for a while now.
They have. I love those guys.
Yep, they make it possible for you guys to hear this. So let's give them the new thing that they're promoting, because they just made an announcement.
They did. All right, so for everyone that's into PDFs on any level, they just released PDF Pen version 4 and PDF Pen Pro 4. And if you're not exactly sure what that means, these are applications that let you edit PDFs. You can manipulate the text, images, add your own signatures. You can combine PDFs. You can split them apart. You can reorder pages. And you can even make and print out PDF forms. So why would you care? Because this costs a lot less and is easier to use than Adobe Acrobat.
Right.
Right. Okay, so the new version, this version 4 that's out, it actually has some really cool additions. The one that's my favorite, it now has optical character recognition, which means that you can give it a document and that's been scanned, and it will turn that scanned text, which is just an image at that point, into editable text, which is an incredible, incredible time saver. And considering what PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro cost, it's a stunning deal too.
Yeah, and most people you can just call that OCR.
Most people call that OCR. That's true. I'm so old school.
Now, it also does MS Word inputs, Microsoft Word input, import. I like to call it importing.
Right. And if you are using PDF Pen Pro, mm-hmm. you can also make your own cross-platform PDF forms.
Ah, PDF forms. So actual forms that are in the PDF.
Right.
It's cool.
Right. Very cool.
All right. So PDF Pen is $49.95. This is the new version, version 4. And PDF Pen Pro is $99.95. And we have links to them in the show notes. Please go check out our good friends at Smile on My Mac.
Yes, and I actually use PDF Pen Pro all the time. It's a lifesaver app for me.
Yep, it is good to have sponsors we like.
It is.
Not that we're saying GM can't give us money.
You know, I would stoop to that level. GM is welcome to give us money.
All right, on that funny to me note, let's move on to the news.
Apple's stock followed the overall market down on Monday, then back up again on Tuesday. Norway gave Apple a deadline to respond to DRM violation allegations. App Store reviews are finally under control. Apple is getting more of the laptop market. iTunes U will be accessible to the blind. And Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer gave us all an early Christmas present by saying he is pretty sure Apple's business model won't work.
Thank you, Steve. Shares in Apple plunged more than 13%. Now, this actually is not funny at all. Shares in Apple plunged more than 13% during the morning trading session on Monday, September 29th, as concerns about the credit crisis in the U.S. began to mix with concerns of a slowing economy. In addition, Morgan Stanley and RBC Capital cut their ratings on the stock, citing a slowdown in PC sales and broader concerns relating to the economy. This was quickly followed by Credit Suisse analyst Steven Serrano cutting his target price for Apple from $200 a share $260 a share, citing the potential for economic instability. Apple ended up closing the day on Monday at $105.26 per share, down more than $22, a one-day drop of more than 17.9%.
Wow. Mm. And then on Tuesday, September 30th, however, investors found the newly cheap Apple too tempting, even in its bruised condition, helped in part when investment firm Gabelli raised its rating on Apple to a buy from a hold. Piper Jaffray analyst and longtime Apple fanboy Gene Munster also weighed in, saying that concerns about Apple in the current financial mess were overblown, saying, quote, "Apple is better positioned than other tech players to weather the storm," unquote. The combination of bargain hunters and the two positive analyst statements resulted in the stock rallying more than $9 per share to close the day at $114.35, which makes a gain of 8.64%, wiping away almost half of the previous day's losses and restoring some of Brian's sanity.
But only some.
Well, that's all we can ask.
So for the point of full disclosure, I do have a tiny, tiny holding in Apple. Now, speaking of Apple, the company has until November 3rd to respond to allegations that it is in violation of Norwegian law when it comes to selling DRM-controlled music on the Norwegian iTunes store. Consumer Ombudsman Bjørn Erik Dern said he and his fellow regulators in the EU... Didn't mean to spring that one on you, Jeff. Had agreed Norway would be the venue for a test case on the issue. Mr. Toon said that the Apple has had 2 years to view to work out a solution that would allow iTunes downloads to work on any digital media device, and that its failure to do so could be a violation of Norwegian law. He said, quote, "It's a consumer's right to transfer and play digital content." Digital content bought and downloaded from the internet to the music device he himself chooses to use. iTunes makes this impossible or at least difficult, and hence they act in breach of Norwegian law, unquote.
Wow, that's a hard act to follow. Okay. Apple Inc. has changed a fundamental aspect of its App Store customer reviews, adding a requirement that customers have bought or downloaded it before being allowed to post a review.
Yay!
The yay is because I had a horrible time getting through that sentence when we were reviewing the script earlier.
Actually, I was yaying the news.
Oh,
I wasn't
going
to bust you on the allowing thing.
It's too late. It's all out in the open. My life apparently is an open book. Okay, users who have not downloaded a given app who click on the Write a Review link found on every app in the App Store will be given a message explaining the new requirement. And according to our tests, the restriction has been introduced for both free and paid apps on the App Store. And we're calling it a novel idea. And the move appears to have been aimed at counteracting the legions of people who have posted one-star reviews to protest the price of some paid apps without having actually downloaded or used them. In addition, Apple appears to have removed older, already posted reviews that don't meet the requirement from the App Store. Oh, novel indeed.
What a bunch of dillweeds. According to NPD, Windows laptops had only about an 80% market share in June and July at brick-and-mortar stores. In retail dollars, the share was only about 65%, with the rest going mostly to Apple. Oops. Microsoft and its partners should dread the fact that one in every $3 in retail store notebooks is going to Apple, and that's according to Joe Wilcox, who said so in a report for eWeek's Microsoft Watch. They might dread even more, and that might lead them to suggest that Apple should close up shop and sell off its assets, as Apple has risen to number 4 in the overall notebook share, clearly a sign of Apple's obvious doom.
Clearly. Massachusetts State Attorney General Martha Coakley announced recently that Apple had acceded to demands from her state that iTunes and iTunes U be made accessible to the blind. In a statement, Ms. Coakley's office said that in the agreement reached with Apple, quote, "Apple would make sure that both of these services are accessible to blind consumers and students using assistive technology called screen access software," unquote.
Apple's business model of offering proprietary software combined with proprietary hardware will lose out to Microsoft's licensing approach in the smartphone market and keep the company from gaining any more share in the personal computing and enterprise markets. According to Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, who decided to give the tech press an early Christmas present by making a series of idiotic statements, Mr. Ballmer made his remarks at the Churchill Club in San Jose, California.
And concerning the smartphone market, Mr. Ballmer posited that all cell phones will be so-called smartphones within 5 to 10 years, and that the vast majority of them would be Windows Mobile devices. And that is, according to Mr. Ballmer, because the market will mature into one with separate software and hardware businesses, the same model by which Microsoft came to dominate the personal computing market. And for any company to do well in this future market, he claimed, they'd have to follow Microsoft's business model, a model that the company already tried to ditch with its own answer to the iPod when it started selling its own branded Zune digital media devices that still lag far behind Apple's proprietary iPod line.
Oops.
As for Apple and RIM, well, Mr. Ballmer said they'll be relegated to niche status. He said, quote, "That doesn't mean Apple and RIM won't make lots of money. Microsoft is kind of battling for the bigger part of the market."
And there was sort of a silent, less profitable in there too, I think. I'm not quite sure.
I'm pretty sure it was there. I felt it.
Continuing his bonanza of gaffy goodness, Mr. Ballmer added that while he's you know, this is like Sarah Palin for the Saturday Night Live writers.
Yeah, you know, you can't write comedy like this. It just has to happen.
So Mr. Ballmer added that while he sees Apple as a good company, he thinks its strategy of working as the Mac platform's only OS and hardware maker will hold Apple back in the personal computing space, just like it will in the smartphone space. I guess it has in the digital media device market. Mr. Ballmer said that Apple won't increase its market share for Mac computers because of its closed model. Apple has been making steady gains in market share for the last 3 years, apparently having forgotten to check with Mr. Ballmer on this, with that market share rising to 6.6% of the U.S. market in the first quarter of 2008, up from the 2% range earlier in the century.
Mr. Ballmer's most audacious comments came when he was asked about his company's internet search business. He said, quote, "You don't really brute force your way into any market."
Oh, my.
You know, I thought there's a chance I could get through the quote without laughing.
I thought I'd be able to listen to it without laughing, but I couldn't.
All right, let me try it again. Let's see what happens. "You don't really brute force your way into any market."
It's still funny.
It is. To which CNET's Ina Fried commented, quote, "I looked around, but I didn't see anyone choke on their water over that one," unquote.
And he was actually at that dinner, we should add. That's where that came from.
Right.
Good stuff. Uh-oh. Attention, all Macworld Expo attendees. DMO has again worked with our friends at IDG World Expo and the Hotel Milano to secure you a discounted rate at this great hotel. true story, though. We've worked with IDG World Expo. You know, we're lucky men.
We are. And, you know, thank you for all of this entertainment you give me.
You were quite welcome.
I'm practically crying, man.
That's good. So, long story short, we have basically a block of rooms that IDG World Expo is working with us to promote. You get them for Mac. This is for Macworld 2009. You can get them for $174 a night. That's $5 less than you're going to find them anywhere else. And, you know, stay there for a week, and that's at least a free meal and savings. The Hotel Milano was really close. We checked it out last year. We had some of our people staying there. I think we're going to be staying there this year, too. The rooms are nice. They're big. You've got good airport reception throughout the room. Dave's been there actually several times since Macworld, whenever he's had to come into San Francisco for a meeting. He's been super pleased. This is another one of those situations where we're really lucky that we get to work with someone that we like.
It is. And these are nice rooms. And Dave, he's been very happy, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, it is. So if you want the rate, you can go to the URL we have in the show notes. It's resweb.pasky.com/go/MO9 if you really want to remember that. But you can just click.
And if you can write really fast.
And if you can write really fast, right. If you click through to the show notes, though, we've got the link right there, and it'll take you right to the page where you get it. It's all pretty easy and self-explanatory. If you're going to Macworld and you want a nice place that's a block and a half away from the from Moscone, that's your bet.
I think it's a great bet, too.
And that sound means it's time for the Context Machine. Now, that's where Jeff and I get to delve a little more deeply into how whacked out Steve Ballmer is.
Why, yes, we do.
We just have to start there because, I mean, seriously, his stuff, it's this weird mixture of, like, delusion and complete denial of reality and hypocrisy, just all sort of wrapped up into one.
I wonder if he drinks absinthe. That might account for some of this.
It could have. I think he just got hit in the head too much when he was a high school and college athlete.
You know, that explains a lot.
No, but seriously... Well, it's not really serious because it's so funny, but let's start with him saying that Apple's not going to make any more gains in the computer market because of their closed platform, which has been the Microsoft mantra. It's been Microsoft's business model to not do that now for, you know, umpteen years, and it's been a model that's worked for them. But the thing is that Apple has been making steady market share gains for the last 3 years.
And they've been making those gains when their competitors on the PC side have been losing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Apple's gain in market share has got to come from somewhere. It's going to come from...
Well, right. But so I guess to clarify, what I should say is as their sales are slowing simply because of the way the market is going, Apple's have been increasing in spite of the way the market is going.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. So, like, they're actually seeing... Well, it's been their growth that's slowed. So, yeah.
Right.
So they've seen their growth slowing while... it's not so much that Apple is merely taking some sales from them. Apple's own sales are, you know, skyrocketing. And that was your point, right?
That's my point. And thank you for being able to figure out how to take all of my words and put them into some form of coherency.
Yeah. So for the point here about Steve Ballmer is that for him to talk about Apple never, you know, not being able to gain any market share in the computer business is just in weird denial that that's exactly what they've been doing for the past 3 years, despite the fact that Apple has continued to stick with its business plan of offering the whole widget.
And it seems to be working for Apple. It does. Apple had some rocky times years ago, but I don't think that was because of their model. I think it's because of the way they were managing everything.
Yeah, it was the execution.
Right. And it's... So their model is holding up.
I would even actually say that for a long time, that Microsoft's model of that led to cheaper computers was, I mean, that actually was, it was successful for a lot of reasons. And my point being that I think that part of what we've been seeing with Apple is not just the great marketing, it's not just the greatness of using Mac OS X, it is also the market having had enough of the end result of the licensing model.
Yes, and I think a lot of consumers have had enough of the it's just good enough mentality that has grown out of the whole Microsoft philosophy.
Right. Great. But then for Steve, I mean, it's just weird because that comment would have made a lot more sense 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
Well, you know, this is the sort of comment that he's been making for years. And if you say something like that often enough, you might just be able to convince yourself it's really true.
Yeah, maybe. You know, it's funny. It's all the guys who, and of course, you know, it's natural. If you're in a business and you've chosen a particular business model, chances are that you think that business model is best.
Odds are,
right. So for, you know, people, you know, Michael Dell and Kevin Rose, not Kevin Rose, I'm sorry. What's his last name? Certainly not Kevin Rose.
No, but see, now that's what stuck in my head, thanks.
From Dig and the TV show.
Yeah, it's gone from my head.
It's their old president who became CEO and was recently demoted when Michael Dell came back into the company. You know, they picked at Apple for years, and a big part of what they were picking on is, you know, is Apple's whole business model, and, you know, because to them, cheap was king. You know, devaluing their product to nothing was what was making them tons of money, and so they couldn't see any value whatsoever in doing it a better way, or doing it, another way. Clearly, to Microsoft, you know, there's a reason why Bill Gates pursued the licensing model to begin with. When he went into IBM, and IBM was going to buy the operating system, and Bill Gates said, "We won't sell it to you, we'll only license it to you." And IBM famously said, "Well, everyone knows that the profits are in the hardware." You know, Bill Gates did that for a reason, and that was because he thought that licensing was the way to own the market and to make things, you know, for him to make the most money. And he, you know, made a lot of money doing it.
He did. And I think he really had a lot of foresight in that he figured out how to take advantage of that whole licensing thing. And now we have the Microsoft we have today.
Yeah, and the crappy product that is Windows.
Right.
And all the problems they've had trying to update Windows and bring in new technologies. And, you know, everything that goes along with that is because it's the end result of all these years of trying to make an operating system that'll run on all this stuff instead of what Apple does, which is to own the hardware and own the software so you can ensure that they work together.
Right.
So, it's funny to hear him talking about that. And it's funny to hear him talking about the smartphone business, where, again, Windows Mobile has been losing market share in the smartphone market.
It has. And, you know, and even if you discount the iPhone from the mix, I'm not seeing RIM as a niche player.
I mean, no.
They have very popular devices.
Yeah. And, you know, note that they I actually don't note anything. I lost my train of thought. But for him to say that is a little bit ambitious at the very least, and I think it's one that again is a bit delusional. I think that Windows Mobile is not going to do all that well when you've got competitors like RIM who make a dynamite product with their BlackBerry line. And Apple with its success in the iPhone product line.
Yeah, I see the iPhone as a growing product for quite a while. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that either want this as their first phone or are looking at this as a replacement for whatever else they have. Sorry, hairball. And it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of these people that are lining up or getting ready to line up to get an iPhone are coming from the Windows Mobile market, because there's a lot of people that just aren't happy with it.
Well, I think that Apple has been bringing a lot of people into the smartphone market. People that weren't turned on to the BlackBerry because it was clearly aimed at businesses. People that didn't want to mess with the Windows Mobile again because it's kind of aimed at business and you know they don't really, you know, no one really likes those things. I actually think that Apple expanded the market quite a bit.
I think so. I'm a perfect example. My phone before my first gen iPhone was a Razor. I never bought
mine too.
Yeah, I never bought a BlackBerry. I never bought a Treo. I never bought a Windows Mobile device because there were issues with every one of those devices that simply did not make them worth the time and money that would be involved in getting them to do what I needed to do. And then the iPhone came along, and yes, it had limitations and still does have certain limitations, but it is so much closer to what I wanted in a smartphone than anything else that has come along. And, you know, and I'm very happy with my iPhone and now my iPhone 3G.
Likewise. Absolutely. So again, Ballmer's in a little bit of delusional land. And then, you know, let's look at the iPod line where he's talking about the importance of the licensing model. And yet Microsoft, to try to compete with Apple, took Apple's business model.
How many Zunes have you seen in the wild?
You know, I haven't. I've never seen a one. I don't really look for them, but I've never seen a one. I saw that Sean King had tweeted recently that he saw, or was it you?
No, I know what you're thinking of. It was Sean King. He tweeted a day or two ago that he saw his second Zune ever in the wild.
We're talking about our friend Sean King of Your Mac Life,
right? And so now I think Sean and I are tied for the number of Zunes we've seen in the wild. So unless he's by coincidence seeing the same people I am, then we now have visual proof that there are four Zunes out there. The two I saw, the two Sean saw.
Yeah. So, you know, again, for Ballmer to talk the smack that he's talking about how his business model is somewhat superior to the proprietary business model, is in denial about the fact that his company is doing a proprietary thing. It's just weird.
Well, look at the Xbox. It's the same thing. Microsoft really controls everything on that.
Right. That is true, as they should.
Right. When you're talking about the gaming market like that, it makes sense to totally control that whole product.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why gaming developers like developing for, for Xbox in particular. I think Microsoft has done a great job of catering to developers on the Xbox, which, by the way, funny enough, is something that they tried to do with Windows that I think is you know, it's kind of weird. Microsoft often forgets that they need to be making products that their consumers want, not products that they want to sell and not products that developers want to develop for, not products and platforms that the movie companies will and labels will be happy about because, you know, they get to maintain the control. They really need to be making things that people want to buy.
Oh, come on. That would never work.
And the Xbox, that's actually a place where they did just that. Well, actually, that's not true. It's a place where what's good for the developer happens to also be good for the consumer.
So they just got lucky on that one.
They got lucky, and they've done it well. They've done a really good job of that. But what I was going to say is that one of the reasons why developers like developing for consoles is because they don't have to worry about hardware incompatibility. And the reason why they don't, when it comes to the Wii, when it comes to the PlayStation, when it comes to, you know, any of the consoles, the whole point is that the manufacturer controls the whole widget. They own the they own the software, they own the hardware.
Yeah, and it sounds so familiar. Who else does
more
that?
More or less just works.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. Doesn't it sound familiar?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Ballmer's wacky. And he's in denial.
He is. And, but, you know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that his wacky denial state, on one hand, is a blessing because it gives us all of this content to work with that we would otherwise not have.
Indeed, it does. There's that one final statement, though, that we just have got to poke fun at, and that's him saying you don't really brute force your way into any market. Yeah, it's
I can't stop laughing.
It's after the catastrophe that was Yahoo, their attempt to buy Yahoo, attempt to completely brute force their way through that. They're saying we're going to buy you, and Yahoo's saying no, and they're saying, oh yeah, we will, because we're gonna try to do a proxy battle with you. And you know, we're going to overthrow your board because, you know, we're Microsoft and this is what we want. And the board going, yeah, sure, go ahead. And the shareholder saying, yeah, sure, whatever. And then Carl Icahn coming in saying, no, this is got, oh, this is better. Yahoo needs to be to sell its crap to Microsoft so Microsoft can ruin it. And
Carl Icahn keeps me out, just so you know.
Fair enough. And then again, the shareholders saying no, that was absolutely a case of Microsoft trying to brute force their way in the market. That's what they always do. Everything that they do, they buy their way in the market, they bludgeon their way in the market, and so for him to say that is just weird.
Yeah, I know. And they did the same thing with Internet Explorer. They've done the same thing with Windows. To a degree, they did that with the Xbox. And
yeah, let's look at Explorer. They bought Explorer. They put, I think it was 3,000 people working on the very first version of Explorer for Windows.
That's
this,
insane.
By the way, compared to, at the time, Netscape had less than 800 employees supporting 17 different platforms.
Right, and those 800 employees, that included the people writing the code and all of the administrative people. That was everyone.
Well, the 3,000 people working on Explorer probably included everyone too.
Yeah, but still, that's a buttload more.
Netscape was not only supporting Navigator, they were also supporting at that point all their server lines, which, you know, we're going back to the mid-90s here.
Right.
And where Netscape was the big player in making server software. So Microsoft had all these employees trying to make Internet Explorer 1 for Windows only, and it was a piece of crap. But again, they were trying to brute force their way into the market, and then the only way they could get people to use it was to give it away for free.
Right.
Which, you know, helped put Netscape out of business, but that's another issue too. So
that sounds kind of brute force to me.
Yeah, it's a little bit brute force. So, I mean, I don't know. You don't really brute force. Dude. Maybe his new title should be Dude. Steve Ballmer, Dude.
But in a bad way.
So I just was delighted that Einar Fried wrote in his news article, I looked around, but I didn't see anyone choke her in their water over that one. I mean, that's just funny.
You know, I don't think I would have had as much grace had I been at that event.
I would have choked. I would have absolutely and positively let out a.
Well, you've heard me laugh, and so imagine that coming out in the middle of that whole comment. I don't think I would have been able to stop laughing. I'd laugh like I sneeze.
I might have had to let out a dude,
followed by "Are you fracking kidding me?"
Steve Ballmer. I wonder how long he's going to be left to run Microsoft. I think he's running it into the ground, but whatever.
You know, I think that Microsoft is so big that he can continue running it into the ground for a long time before people start really freaking out. And when they do, and they decide that it's time for him to move along, I think that he's just arrogant enough that he will try and bully everyone into letting him keep his position.
Stockholders, sweat flying.
The new Mucky dance Boy dance.
All right. We should probably move on to Apple's stock movements and whatnot.
Yeah, we should.
I see happening on Monday. I actually think that Gene Munster is stockholders. I think that Gene Munster is right that the market was overreacting to concerns about Apple and the economy, Apple and its role within the economy, I should say. But I think there's an even more important thing here is that investors were looking for you know, sort of a target in the midst of all this freaking out with the Congress having voted down the bailout package, that two firms coming out saying that the downgrading Apple, I think that just sort of like resulted in a knee jerk sell response to everybody. And that if it hadn't been Apple, it would have been some other company, some other high profile leading edge company.
Right. It just so happens that Apple is the high profile leading edge company that was singled out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, which is not to say that the economy is not a mess, and it's not to say that, you know, things are not great, and we have a lot of uncertainty within the economy, and that could well affect Apple's business. If the economy crashes hard enough, Apple will probably sell fewer iPods and Macs.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, everyone else will be selling fewer of whatever they sell as well.
Right, which is you know, part of the problem in the first place.
Right.
But the point is that you know, if you go down to an Apple store and the place is packed, and it's kind of hard to see signs of an economic slowdown. At least here in the Bay Area, the Apple stores that I've been into in the last couple of weeks have been packed full of people.
You know, I haven't been in an Apple store for 2 weeks because, you know, I've been like traveling a lot, so I haven't had a chance to go in. But the stores that I have been in, that are typically considered surplus income type stores or disposable income type stores, they've been pretty busy. So I'm going to assume that translates into Apple stores still being busy as well.
Yeah, and it's possible that people are busy and not buying. I mean, like I said, we're not trying to say that that nothing's wrong and that, you know, that you know, everybody should buy Apple shares, and we're not giving any kind of investment advice like that. But we are saying that there are, you know, a lot. I think that there were some knee jerk reactions why everybody began selling, and that it just happened to be Apple, and that this was reflected by what happened on Tuesday, the day that we're recording, where everybody, bargain hunters, looked and said, "Geez, Apple's $105 a share. It's time to buy."
Yeah, and they did.
And it's what happened. Of course, you know, Gene Munster saying what he said, and the Gabelli firm also raising their rating to a buy. That also helped. You know, but there was probably a lot of overselling of Apple on Monday, relating to even the economic worries.
Probably, and so, you know, and in the grand scheme of things, it's not like it's a giant space rock hitting the planet.
No.
So this is a lot easier to recover from.
Yeah. So we'll, you know, we're keeping our eye on that stuff, but there's one other little fun area that I wanted to look at, and that was
the Norway thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts.
You know, I'm trying to figure out, and this is something we've discussed before, but I'll just bring it right up right away. Why is Norway focusing just on Apple with this whole DRM thing? Why aren't they looking to the labels? Because Apple is saying our hands are tied. The labels are requiring us to use DRM.
Right, and what Norway is saying now, this is the part that that I completely agree with. People, and this is effectively, this is law in Norway. Consumers have the right to transfer and play digital content bought and downloaded from the internet to the music device he himself chooses to use. Hooray! I like that. I hate DRM. Yeah. I hate DRM. I'm not trying to defend DRM. I am not trying to defend fair play. But my problem here is that these cats are looking at Apple saying that Apple needs to basically license fair play to everyone, when instead they should be saying that the DRM has got to go, period.
Right. Yeah, they're looking at the wrong part of the problem right now.
The totally wrong part of the problem. I'm probably just made everyone's ears break. Even if Apple did not have its hands tied by the labels on this DRM issue, even if the root of the matter would still be the presence of the DRM, not who got to license it.
Right.
Get rid of the DRM. And what they need to be attacking the labels for requiring the DRM, they need to basically be looking at the law in terms of saying that digital downloads need to be sold without DRM restrictions.
You know, that's exactly what they should be doing. And the whole, I'm just at a loss as to why they think that they should be focusing just on Apple in this whole thing. I know I keep going back to that, but I'm not getting it. Is it simply because Apple is high profile? I don't know.
Well, Apple's got the lion's share of, you know, both of the market, both in terms of the downloads and the digital media devices. And that could be why. I don't think, and I'm not an expert on this, so maybe some of our Norwegian listeners can, you know, help fill us in on some of the details here, but I believe that there are other online stores, and I don't think that they're all DRM free.
You know, that would be a nice thing to know. So if we have anyone that's listening in Norway, let us know. That would be cool. I did have a thought though. Maybe the reason they're focusing on Apple is because the way the law is written, it applies to whoever is doing that final distribution and not to whoever is pulling the strings behind the scenes.
It could be, because if you look at Microsoft, before they released the Zune, when they were doing their whole Plays for Sure crap, the DRM was still there, but Microsoft was licensing it to any and all comers.
Right.
And so it really seems like Norway is basically saying that that's the business model they want Apple to take. Now, what Apple's position has been, what Steve said in an open letter, and of course, you know, Steve could be lying, but he said that Apple wants to sell music without DRM, which they do with EMI.
Right. And Apple has put out its open letter saying that everyone is welcome to participate in their DRM-free program.
Right. And he has said that all the major labels except EMI are still requiring Apple to control their songs, in other words, have a DRM scheme, and that if Apple were to license that DRM scheme out, fair play, to any and all comers, that it's only a matter of time before it gets broken because there's too many hands in the pot.
You know,
and that Apple is on the hook when that happens,
right?
According to their licenses with the music labels,
right?
So therefore, according to Steve, Apple cannot license Fairplay out to anyone else.
You know, I have an idea here, and I know this is kind of way out there and wacky, but I said wacky. I haven't used that word for years. But what if Norway looked at what the record labels are doing and said, hey, you know, they're letting all of these other music distribution systems have their music without DRM. Why aren't they letting Apple do the same thing?
Yeah. And of course, you know, we know the answer to that, or at least we think we know the answer to that.
Right.
And that is that the labels right now are trying. They're sick and tired of Apple having so much control over their business model, by which I can say they're sick and tired of Apple being right.
And they're sick and tired of being able to make money hand over fist through the Apple Store.
Right. So what they're trying to do is they're letting everybody else sell music without DRM. For instance, Amazon, at least here in the States, Amazon and other stores, so that Apple will lose market share to these other places.
You know, that is just whacked.
It makes me frustrated, not because I care about Apple's position with iTunes, which as a small shareholder I certainly do. But that's not what frustrates me here. What frustrates me here is the labels' own myopia that leads to them shooting themselves in their own feet in order to spite Apple's nose. Wow. That was a tortured metaphor.
But, you know, I was along for the ride. I could not wait to see where that was going.
And it's just, it drives me. I hate the labels. I hate the movie studios, at least when it comes to such issues as their distribution policies and goals. It just drives me nuts. And the situation in Norway, I personally would rather see Apple shut down their doors in Norway than give in to this.
Well, my fear is that if Apple gives in, that it will just balloon and become this horrible headache for the company. And I don't know where it would lead to, but my guess is it would lead to no good.
Yeah, and clearly the Norway ombudsman—that word has always driven me nuts.
Ombudsman,
thank you. Is going on a publicity campaign against Apple on this, and I think that Apple needs to do the same thing. I think that Apple needs to be shouting from the rooftops, "We want to give DRM. Make the labels let us do it."
Yeah, you know I'd be totally fine with that.
Norway's attacking the wrong target. And the funny thing is that Norway doesn't even have to convince the music labels to change their business practices. They have this, and I don't think we mentioned it in the story. What's the name of the, it's the Market Council.
Right, right.
So basically the Market Council in Norway has the regulatory authority to force a business to change its trade practices. And it's the Market Council that Ombudsman Toon is threatening to go to in order to force Apple to license Fair Play out to any and all comers.
You know,
they can instead go to the labels and force the labels to drop the requirement.
You know,
so they don't have to.
That makes far more sense to me than telling Apple you now have to license this DRM technology that Apple would frankly rather not be using at all right now.
Or so they say. Yeah. Get rid of the DRM. Don't change it. Don't license it. Get rid of it.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Norway gave Apple an edict that says you will license Fair Play if Apple just said, you know what, screw you, we're going home. And they pulled the plug on the Norway iTunes store.
Yeah. I'd rather see it actually be worked out in a sane and reasonable way. But
yes,
but barring that, I would rather see Apple close its doors on this. It's the music labels that are the problem. Norway and all the other EU countries that actually regulate their businesses or regulate their industries, they need to be going after the labels.
They do. And really, if Norway forces or tries to force Apple to license Fair Play, ultimately, I think the only winners out of that will be the record labels.
Fair enough. Okay, with that in mind, let's do the quick tip.
Okay. All right, so today's quick tip actually relates to iTunes and music, or in this case, podcasts. So I was asked by one of the TMO readers about better ways to manage podcasts in iTunes, and I have a nice answer for them, iTunes 8. In iTunes 8, you can now set per podcast settings.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So what you do in iTunes is select the podcast that you want to manage, and then at the bottom of the window where you're seeing all your podcasts, you click the settings button. And that opens up a new dialog where you can tell iTunes how often to check for updates for the podcast that you have selected. So you can set it to check for new episodes every day, you know, like every week, manually, whatever. And then once a year for us. No, that's not true. I think we get like three out. And you can also tell it when new episodes are available, how many it needs to download, and how many episodes to keep. You can do that on a podcast by podcast basis. That's it. So select the podcast you want, click the settings button, and then use pop-up menus to adjust the settings for that podcast to make it work the way you want.
Oh, that's good stuff, man.
I like that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. And looks like we have a special thanks.
We do. I actually picked up that tip from Adam Christensen from the MacCast, and I have to say, this is one of the beautiful things about Twitter, because I was looking for the answer, and before I had a chance to even start looking into iTunes myself, this shows up in Twitter from Adam. And I thought, oh,
well, speaking of Twitter, we should probably put out our Twitter accounts right now.
We should. All right, so mine is jgamet, and that's J-G-A-M-E-T.
So, and mine, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say twitter.com/ and then our name, and that'll take you right to us.
Right. And mine would be TM O'Brien. That's TM O'Brien.
Just like that.
Brian with a Y, B-R-Y-A-N. And you can definitely follow us both. And we first mentioned it last week, and we've already had some folks picking us up from the podcast. So thanks.
Yeah, thanks for following.
Yeah. Indeedy do. Well, with that in mind,
this is where I do the whole wrap-up thing.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay, here we go. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, send us your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness.
Steveliness.
And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And my Twitter, again, jgamet. So sign up, and you can see all the incredible things that go on behind the scenes.
And you can still follow me at TM O'Brien on Twitter. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Thanks, CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And of course, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.